Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. It's Ken Milne again. It's August 20th, 2012, and I'm still up in beautiful Algonquin Park acting as a camp doctor. So there may be a few sounds out there that you hear on this podcast. Don't worry, it's just nature. Anyways, this second podcast of the SGEM is going to focus in on evidence-based medicine. The SGEM is the result of the BEAM project. The BEAM project, standing for the Best Evidence in Emergency Medicine. It was started by a brilliant Canadian, Dr. Andrew Worster. Now, I'm never going to live that comment down. It was further developed by the smartest EBM guy I know in the States, Dr. Chris Carpenter from St. Louis. Not the famous baseball player Chris Carpenter, the other guy. He developed the best journal club ever in emergency medicine called WashUJC. All the links will be provided in the show notes. So let's get today's show started. We're going to talk about the history of evidence-based medicine, different levels of EBM, and the leaky pipe model. So the history of evidence-based medicine. Let's go back 200 or 300 years to a guy named Dr. Mesmer. Trust me, you know this guy. Dr. Mesmer lived from 1734 to 1815, and he was a German physician. He believed in animal magnetism, and so he used magnets to treat people. And these people reported that their arthritis was better, their headaches were better, their sleep, their energy, everything was getting better. In France, he became very, very popular. So popular that King Louis XVI of France said, "Hey, what is this Dr. Mesmer guy doing?" So he struck some kind of scientific commission with all the smartest guys around at the time, including Benjamin Franklin, to look into it. They set up a trial where they put the magnets in front of patients, but what they did was they blindfolded them. And so the patients didn't know if the magnets were actually in front of the patients or not in front of the patients for the active treatment. In other words, it was a blinded trial. And what were the results of the trial? No difference between the two groups. So in other words, and this is why I know you know this guy, that's where the term "they were mesmerized" came from. So the next clinical trial I want to talk about is one by a Dr. Hamilton in 1816. This was looking at the control of allocation bias. He wrote a paper called, and pardon my, Latin, Disserato Medico Ingalulius, I don't know. Anyways, it was looking at bloodletting for camp fever. And what they did was, bloodletting was the cool thing to do. It was the gold standard of the day, shall we say. And if people got a fever, what they did was bleed the evil humors out of them, again, prior to the germ theory of disease. And so they would bleed their patients, and you know what? If they didn't get better, obviously they bled them too late, or obviously they didn't bleed them enough. Well, this guy Hamilton didn't buy that. So he set up a trial where people were randomized to get rid of allocation bias. And so he had the bleed group and the not bleed group, and they were randomly assigned into each one. And lo and behold, and all the bias should have favored the bleeding, because that was the gold standard at the time, when you looked at how many people were alive, how many soldiers with camp fever were alive at the end of the trial, 81% were alive if they were bled, and 19% had died. How about the ones that didn't get the standard therapy, the community standard, the gold standard of the day? About 97% were alive, and 3% had died. So that is a 6 times increase in death if you bloodlet people, or a 600% increase in death. Now we know the treatment for fever or sepsis isn't to actually volume deplete people and take blood away. Is actually the treatment now is to give fluids and to give blood if necessary, and of course, you know, antibiotics. So let's so that was the first clinical trial looking at allocation bias. So further along this history of evidence-based medicine, there was a guy named Archie Cochran, not the American Johnny Cochran, not the Canadian or the Canadian city, Cochrane, Alberta, but the Scottish epidemiologist. And in 1970, he published a book called The Effectiveness and Efficiency of Random Reflections on Health Services. And this started the Cochrane Collaboration, arguably the best form of systematic reviews and the highest level of evidence. Jump ahead another 20 years and you get to the 1990s with McMaster University and David Sackett and Gord Guyette. And it was Guyette who coined the term evidence-based medicine in 1992. In 2007, the British Medical Journal published an article on medical milestones, the top medical milestones in the last 140 years. And there was 15 things listed, including things like anesthesia, antibiotics, DNA, the germ theory of disease. But one of the top 15 things of medical advances or milestones in the last 140 years, according to the British Medical Journal, was evidence-based medicine. And so in the 2000s, this guy, Dr. Andrew Worster, that I was talking about earlier, started the BEAM project. And the BEAM mission is to provide emergency medicine practitioners with the best clinical evidence to optimize patient care. It has a vision to be the most reliable and valid and unbiased global source of current, clinically relevant, patient-centered medical knowledge for practitioners. So that takes us over the last 200 to 300 years of evidence-based medicine. But then there's levels of evidence. And I talked about the levels of evidence briefly. In fact, I talked about the lowest form of evidence, and that was sort of expert opinion. Expert opinion is, that's what my supervisor intending told me to do. But there are seven levels of evidence, with the bottom being the expert opinion. But then you can move up this unfiltered data to case control trials, case reports, and case series. The next level would be cohort studies. And then, what many people think to be the highest form of evidence, random clinical trials. But it isn't. That's just the fourth highest. And these are unfiltered levels of evidence. Then you get into the filtered or the top of the pyramid. You can have critical appraised articles, like what BEAM does, or critical appraised topic areas, so not just one single article, but actually on a whole topic area. And BEAM does some of that. And so do the Cochrane reviews. And then you get up to the systematic reviews themselves as the highest level of evidence. So that's the history of EBM, and that's the level of evidence from Ken told me to do it this way being the lowest form of evidence, joke, to the highest form of evidence being systematic reviews. The last thing I wanted to talk about on this podcast was the leaky pipe model. This was published by Pathman. And he put this leaky pipe model together showing that it takes approximately 10 years for high quality, clinically relevant information to be published to result in people using it at patients' bedside. And the SGEM thinks this is way too long. We want to shorten that KT window to 1 year. Pathman put down in his leaky pipe model that it was people were not aware of the evidence. If they were aware, they didn't accept it. If they accepted it, they didn't think it was applicable to their situation, or they weren't able to do it. They weren't able to act on it. They weren't able to adhere to it, or they just didn't agree. So those were the seven A's. He had seven A's: aware, accept, applicable, able, act on, adhere, and agree. And that's why he said it took between 6 and 13 years for high-quality, clinically relevant information to reach the patient bedside. Again, the SGEM wants to cut that KT window down from 10 years to 1 year. And we want to do that with students becoming the masters. Yes, you guys listening, we want you to teach your attendings the best evidence and how to use social media to do that. After this podcast, you will hopefully have some cool stories to tell about evidence-based medicine. You'll understand where the term mesmerized came from and blinding of trials and allocation bias. You'll also know the levels of evidence and the leaky pipe model. So, we'd like you to go and like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, give us your feedback, and be skeptical of everything you were taught, even stuff you hear on the SGEM. And remember, the first rule of emergency medicine is don't panic. Nobody stays in VFib forever. Talk with you next time on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.